This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back in on this Saturday afternoon as we continue to get you ready for the big weekend in the NFL. Looking so forward to the divisional round, two games today and tomorrow. But time now for some PGA news and notes. And how about last weekend? The first full event of 2023 featured some of the best in the world teeing it up in paradise for the Sony Open. Siwoo Kim won in Hawaii as he beat Hayden Buckley by one stroke. So we're going to take time to recap and get his analysis. And that is former PGA pro and author, the great Larry Miller. Good afternoon on this Saturday, Larry.
Good afternoon, Big E, and everybody out there. Hope you're enjoying the nice winter weather that we're having. It's it's day to day. One day it's mild and 70 degrees, and it's cold front comes in, but we have to. It is what it is. So we have to be versatile with our play.
Well, I always take time to read the Farmer's Almanac, and it was completely wrong. They were saying we were going to have a brutal winter, so we'll embrace this. I mean, it's like 70 degrees in Houston. This is the perfect golfing weather.
Yes, here too in New Orleans, we have the same thing. We get the rain, of course, but as far as the cold weather, it really hasn't appeared yet. We had that one cold snap, and that's been it.
Yeah. Hey, so, let's take time to reflect on the Sony Open that featured last week six of the top eight golfers in the FedEx Cup standings, and the last man standing was Siwoo Kim, 18 under. And he won his first tournament in 2023. So how did he do it? And, you know, what did we learn, Larry?
Well, he did it with steadiness. You know, he's such a steady player. He just hits it straight all the time and hits those approach shots. He hits a lot of greens in regulation. And if you do that, you're going to, you know, look, it's just simply a matter of numbers. The more greens you hit in regulation, the more birdie putts you have. More putts you have, the more you're going to make. It's that simple. And so it's a tribute to accuracy. We talk about length these days and bombing the ball, and DeChambeau got us going with all that. But really, when you get right down to scoring in golf, it's all about accuracy in the short game. And but he's got that in spades. And so I thought it was an interesting tournament. You know, I had predicted Jordan Spieth would win. Then he shot 64 the first round.
Didn't make the cut.
Boy, I said, I'm looking pretty good again, you know. Then he comes up with a 75 and misses a cut. Now, how does that happen? How does a guy of that caliber, you know, have 11-shot difference in two rounds? And sometimes in golf, yeah, we all know that. Everybody out there that plays knows that it's a very sensitive, delicate thing, and the slightest thing can go wrong with your swing, and next thing you know, you're out of sync, and that's what happened to him. And it doesn't happen often, but it does happen to the best in the world sometimes, and that was in evidence there. But anyway, I think he'll bounce back real strong this week. But I thought it was interesting in the tournament that if you look at the names on the leaderboard after the second and third round, you were hard pressed to find one of the name players, let's say, in quotation marks, marquee players. It was all guys. You say, well, who is that? You know, who is that guy? But that just shows you the depth of talent right now on the tour and all these young guys coming up. It's definitely a changing of the guard, and you're going to see that more and more where, you know, the fans are going to get to know these guys. But right now, a lot of them, you just don't know who they are.
Hey, you are listening to the familiar voice, former PGA Pro author. Check him out online, LarryMillerGolf.com. And we are doing a full recap of the Sony Open. South Korean Siwoo Kim won his fourth career PGA Tour event. And guess what? He's only, as Larry's talking about, this young changing of the guard, these younger players coming up. Siwoo Kim, only 27 years old. It was his first win since the 2021 American Express. And so, you know, for some of our listeners that are tuning in across the country, you kind of shared about what we can learn from why he was able to have success. But how does he handle himself on the course? What can we take away from that, Larry?
Well, I think it's the calm demeanor that allows him to be consistent. When you're a fiery, emotional sort of person, you tend to have ups and downs, pretty radical ups and downs. But a person of more calm demeanor you know, where they don't get too excited over a good shot or too upset over a bad one. Those are the ones that maintain that even keel, and that leads to consistency. That's how you become consistent in golf, is to just realize that every swing you make is one shot, and you can't do anything about one you just hit, but you can certainly plan for the next one. And if you stay tuned into that, then you're not likely to string out, you know, a string of bogeys or bad holes.
You know, what's interesting, too, about Siwoo Kim is that he came from behind to win in Hawaii, and that gave him, as I just mentioned, his fourth career win. So let's talk a little bit about that as far as, Larry, give us some instructional advice. How do you come from behind? Give us some keys on how to approach the day when you're headed into that final round and you're playing from behind and you're trying to catch the leader.
Sometimes it's easier to be a shot or two back going into the final round than it is a shot or two ahead, because when you're behind and you stay aggressive, you know you have to be aggressive. You know that the guy leading is probably going to – you have to figure he's going to play well. So you have to really have a great round. And so you tend to be more aggressive with your play, go for more pins, and be more aggressive with your putts. When you're ahead by a shot or two, you know, sometimes you get into that protective mode. Yeah, you see it in football when you go into a prevent defense. And what it does, it prevents you from winning. And, you know, you have to stay, keep the pedal down, and you have to stay aggressive. And I think that really was evidence in that tournament, you know, where he was able to come from behind and be aggressive through the stretch. Now, as far as closing out a tournament when you are leading, you know, you have to, it's a fine line between being cautious and still being aggressive and not being too conservative. And what I mean by that is that you might have a conservative plan for the way you play the holes, but the swings you make have to be aggressive swings. You can't back off on golf swings. That's when mistakes happen. It's when you try to, you know, take your foot off the gas and be too conservative with your swing. Now, your planning should be cautious. And, you know, if you're in the lead, of course, you shy away from hazards and out of bounds and things like that. But at the same time, when you do decide on the shot you're going to play, you have to make an aggressive swing. And that's how you close out golf tournaments. And that's also how you lose tournaments, is when you don't do that. And you might plan conservatively, but then you swing conservatively too. And that's when mistakes happen. You have to stick to what got you there.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, making birdies and playing aggressive golf.
He knows his stuff. Former PGA Pro author Larry Miller. Check out his website, LarryMillerGolf.com. We're talking about how do you come from behind and cross that finish line so that you are the last man standing or woman holding that trophy. And give us some insights, some more instructional advice about one's inner dialogue. What should be going through your mind? Because you can't get seduced and sucked into, you know, you're only so many shots behind. You've just got to continue to hit, as you're talking about, solid shots. And that confidence, that's going to build, right?
Yes, and you have to disregard other players and what they're
absolutely
doing.
Absolutely.
Because 100%. Because what that does, that takes you out of your mindset and your game plan. And next thing you know, you're making mistakes. You can't get tangled up in that. I think last week we talked about that, is how in golf, it really is. I don't care if there's 300 people in the field of a tournament. It's a solitary game. And you are playing against the golf course, against the scorecard. And you can't think that you're playing against another person and watch them swing and see what they're doing and what kind of result they're having. Because now all of a sudden you're not thinking about what you're doing. That's when mistakes happen in golf. The real successful players, they are in a bubble. And this is something I taught your boys both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just,
yeah,
when it's their turn to play, they enter this bubble, and they don't come out of it till that ball's at rest. And, you know, you don't talk to anybody. You don't extend conversations. You mind your business, and you play as if you're playing by yourself and trying to beat the course.
It is a mental discipline, and many times, in fact, you were just referencing, talking earlier about Jordan Spieth. You know, he lit it up in round one and then ended up missing the cut. And so I have to wonder, I mean, such a stark contrast. You know, you have incredible play on Thursday and then miss the cut. So when that happens, how do you regroup? I mean, you have a weird round. What should be your inner dialogue in regards to that?
Well, you know, my teacher told me years ago, he said, look, he said, I don't care how well you're playing, how well the results have been recently for you. He said, there are some days you're going to go out there and you're just going to struggle to shoot 75 or 76. Just the, it's the nature of golf, is that a lot can go wrong with a golf swing. And, you know, these guys on the tour, they play golf every day, all day, just about, and practice all the time. And so it's harder for them to lose it as it is for the average player. But they do lose it sometimes. It's that sensitive. And so you just have to be accepting of the fact that you're going to have days like that. And my teacher told me that. And when he did, it really relaxed me, because I realized that, look, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your swing or your game. It's just the nature of the game. And you forget it, and you go to the next day. And, you know, you see it all the time. You see these world-class players have, sure, a great round, a bad, yeah, round, then bounce back with another good round. And they're able to just put it behind them. And they don't go to the range thinking, oh, I have a mechanical error in my swing, I have to fix this fault. They don't think that way. They know that they're good, and they just accept it, and they go to the next day. So acceptance is a big part of that, being a successful player and not getting too caught up in trying to fix things that don't need to be fixed.
Always some great insight. Former PGA Pro author Larry Miller. Check out his website, LarryMillerGolf.com. Enjoy the weekend, and we look forward to huddling up and a conversation next week. Thank you so much, Larry. Good stuff.
Okay, great. Let's talk next week, and you all have a great week on the golf course.
You bet. Stick around. The fastest 2 hours in radio, exclusively at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, of course, sponsored by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. And perhaps you're looking for a career that has some flexibility, great pay, and benefits. One of the top places to work in the country, and you can come join a growing team. Go to progressive.com/careers, or you can apply online or give them a call at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE-INSURANCE. As promised, we've got you covered. The NFL divisional round begins today with the Jaguars and the Chiefs, coming up at 4:30 Eastern time on NBC. But right now, we're going to focus our attention on some college football. We're going to continue to celebrate Georgia as they defended their national title. Very impressive game against TCU, and never looked back, 65-7. And we're thrilled to have back with us, first time in 2023, from the Washington Post, to get his takeaways, and that is Chuck Culpepper. Happy New Year, Chuck.
Happy New Year, Alyssa. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
It's good to have you on, and how about those Bulldogs? They dominated from start to finish, and I have to wonder, with the upcoming college football expansion, you know, how this is going to change the dynamics when we talk about college football, going from four teams to 12 in 2024. Give us your perspective.
Oh, I think there's a whole handful of things that the bouquet of things that it accomplishes and presents. There's the idea that a team like TCU, which was the most surprising finalist of the 9-year college football playoff era, has been 9 years so far. A team like TCU, it might have a little more trouble going more rounds, you know, to get to a final. So there's a chance that we would actually see more chalk, as it were, and we're all used to that for 100 years with college football, more than 100 years, you know, where the kingdoms like Alabama, now Georgia, Ohio State, that sport has always been that way in terms of just dominated by the few. Miami's breakthrough in the 1980s is one of the great accomplishments in the sport's history because of that, I think. So I think it's possible that because there's more games, we might see, you know, those more dominant programs more regularly,
yeah,
in the final. But I also think it's going to lend more verve, more variety. The idea that there will be home fields involved in it in the first two rounds, and that, you know, these teams can choose which stadium they're going to play in. Let's say, for example, a TCU or Amon Carter Stadium in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Seats about 45,000. You might choose to have it at AT&T Cowboys place with 80,000 to get, you know, get more in. So a lot of fun little items like that to it. Campus games probably coming up at some places. I think maybe the thing that outpaces all of those factors is that we're going to have our nation back in the college football playoff. And that by that I mean we haven't really had it in this four-team format. It's been so heavily dominated by the Southeast and with very little presence from the West Coast, for example. And this is going to kind of help build in some of that presence. And that's one thing I've always loved about the sport the most is the measurement of regions against each other, you know, and that you can get a games, especially at the end of the season, with teams from entirely different places to, and unfamiliar with each other to play each other. So that's my favorite thing about it is we are no longer going to go without our American West in this thing.
Yeah.
So I've missed our West, for example.
You're listening to the voice of Chuck Culpepper, Washington Post, a regular guest in our rotation on Sports Map Radio Network. Give him a follow on Twitter at Chuck Culpepper, number one. And as we dissect, as we break it down, talking about the college football playoff, it's officially going to triple in size from, as we're talking about, you know, four teams to 12 beginning in the 2024-25 season. And what comes to my mind, Chuck, is when I think about this new format, it's going to provide, you know, a sense of hope for teams, as you're talking about, like on the West Coast. It's not just going to be, you know, purely dominated by the SEC.
Absolutely. And then we add in the hope it's going to provide for the group of five teams. They will have you know, representative in the 12. And that's a lovely thing. I think that could lead us to some people worry about routes in the playoff, but we've already had routes in the playoff. We've had tons of routes in this thing since it went to four teams in 2014. So, in fact, we've had probably more routes than barn burners. So I think the idea that there's going to be, it does make it a little bit more, if I can say, democratic in terms of, you know, just the teams having more hope from all the realms of the top tier of the sport. And so, You even could have possibly some year, it's unlikely, but a scenario where two group of five teams could make it into the playoffs. So, it throws hope around everywhere into all the corners, all the regions, and so many of the places.
Well, the new format, it provides major benefits, and of course, we're all about revenue, right, for the conferences and for the schools. But I'm thinking about, Chuck, the student athletes, and it kind of goes back to what I asked you before as far as giving, you know, them a sense of hope that they're going to get a shot potentially at a title. And it's taken us a long time to get to this point, right?
Well, if we want to go back, it's the whole history of the sport is so crazy that I think people sometimes forget when they complain about the four teams layoff that it's by far the best system we've ever had for determining a champion. So, yes, and this will be another step toward that, and this will be another step up in that long time pursuit of trying to find a champion at this sport. You know, all the years when we had split champions, years way back when we had more than two, sometimes up to six or seven. And so now we're going to have the one. It's going to come from a 12-team playoff, and yes, absolutely more student athletes around the country will be able to realistically think of themselves as getting to that perch.
Well, Chuck, give us your takeaways. Let's review the national title game as Georgia wins, you know, back-to-back and completely dominated. They were unstoppable in the first team in what college football playoff era to win back-to-back natties and the first to repeat champion since, what was it, Alabama in 2011. So how did they do it?
So they were the best all year. I saw them early on against South Carolina, at South Carolina, and I thought it was some of the best, smartest college football that I had ever seen played, you know, not ahead of several teams through the playoff era. You know, there have been teams like that through the playoff era, but here's another one that plays a level of the sport that is just so high, it feels like it has evolved to some fresh point. And that's what they were like for much of the season. They had trouble, as all these teams are young, remember? So they had trouble, as young teams will, at Missouri in one game, and they pulled that out. So they demonstrated their capacity to work themselves out of a tough spot mid-game. And they had their great, great semifinal, 42-41 with Ohio State, a game with no losers. And they managed to get out of that thicket as well, big deficits during that game. So scary deficits during that game. So they were the best all year long, and they were able to demonstrate that they were the best at the end, which is not always, as we know, what happens. So I think the playoff was sort of a ratification of how good they are, how good they've become, and that we are now in their era. You know, we've been in other times when we thought about, say, the Alabama-Clemson time when they played in three championship games and in four playoff games back in the teens. And so now, though, we're in an era where there's one program that's sort of hovering above the rest and that people are looking at, and that's Georgia. And think of it this way, the NFL drafted five players off their defense
that is
in
crazy.
The first round last spring, and they won the championship.
And they reloaded.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's crazy. Washington Post, Chuck Culpepper with us at Sports Map Radio Network. We're breaking it all down, a full recap of the national championship game. And, of course, you know, a lot of folks now, they're saying, Chuck, that the Bulldogs are the new Alabama and that there's been a shift in college football. What say you, especially after such a dominant title game and a performance where they display that? I mean, they are just so solid offensively and defensively.
I think that's true. It's just every facet of the game, it's built itself into a powerhouse. It may be was always sitting there kind of waiting for that a bit. And one of the factors that makes us think of them this way as the new Alabama and makes us think of them as the you know, unmatched powerhouse of the moment is the recruiting. And they come from a populous state, and it's a state with extraordinary high school football. I mean, one year I was on another project, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, and I went to a high school football game around Atlanta, and I just could not believe, having not been around it for a while, the quality and the caliber. So Georgia is a master recruiter as a program, as Alabama was and remains. And Georgia, because of that, I think that's why we tell ourselves, okay, one year they lose five defenders in the first round, and then they're back winning it. And the next year they're going to lose their quarterback who became great, at least on the college football level, and maybe someday on the NFL, I wouldn't rule it out, Stetson Bennett. They lose him, and usually when teams lose quarterbacks, we go, okay, time for some readjustment and so on. But I think because of the way they recruit, we have this trust built in their capacity to adjust to such things better than anybody else can.
The college football conversation continues.
Wake up call!
I just told you I had been caught stealing in my head all morning.
Yep.
And you went, why not?
Get
in my head more.
That wasn't a request?
Oh,
I'm sorry. I thought that was a request.
I'm going to be singing this all day. I looked it up. 1990.
Yeah, that kind of hurts.
That really hurts.
Wake up call with Tony D and Ron Culver. Weekday mornings from 9 to noon Eastern.
If you're missing the Cash In with Jason Page, then you're missing this.
Your life's not getting any better than this if you're Stetson Bennett.
He had 6 touchdowns tonight, 4 passing and 2 rushing. Just talk about your fairy tale night.
Maybe you don't want to even go into the NFL if you're Stetson Bennett. Just walk off the field after this one and be like, you know what, I'm good. Peace out. I'll just go be a legend in Athens. You want to argue he's going to make some money in the NFL? Because let's be honest about this, too. I mean, what are the odds he goes into the NFL and becomes, you know, this amazing quarterback who wins Super Bowl? Because short of any of that, everything after tonight is just downhill. I mean, if he's a mediocre mid-round quarterback who bombs out after his first deal and he's out of the league in 3 years, we will look back at tonight and say this was the high point of life for Stetson Bennett.
The Cash In, weeknights at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on Sports Map Radio. If you're missing the Cash In with Jason Page, then you're missing this.
No matter what Zach Wilson does, in the mind of Robert Saleh, he can do no wrong. As a talent evaluator, you cannot objectively look at Zach Wilson and think this is a kid that's the future of your franchise. I don't know what the Jets are thinking right now. Zach Wilson's not a good quarterback.
The Cash In, weeknights at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back on this Saturday afternoon, the NFL divisional round. We are so glad you are with us. Right now, we're going to rejoin from the Washington Post, Chuck Culpepper. Well, Stetson Bennett, what an interesting, what an inspirational story, you know, walks on. But I have to wonder, what have you heard in terms of why he did not have a lot of opportunities coming out of high school and went off to, what, Mississippi to play ball at junior college?
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's one of those deals where, I mean, physically to look at him, maybe he didn't quite have
undersized,
didn't quite impress. And I think it's always telling and always kind of startling in a way that coaches fall for that too, the way fans do sometimes. And but that coaches who are so steeped in knowledge of their sport and so nuts for their, you know, their film study and their games and their sport, that they too, and you know, Kirby Smart, the head coach, readily would say, you know, we didn't realize it. And it makes you wonder how many quarterbacks there might have been out there through the years who didn't quite get the chance and, given the circumstances, could have done not what he did, but you know, something along the lines. Because, you know, he was becoming great college-wise during the first championship, and by the time of the second, he had this polish about him that's just so rare and just this know-how that's just wonderful to see.
What do you think the future holds for him when we talk about Stetson Bennett?
I don't think I'm going to rule out any possibility. You know, you hear people say, oh, the NFL, it's not going to work because of height or whatever. But I just think there's something there that somebody ought to give a look at. You know, in some way, and you can tell this by how the draft goes every year, nobody knows who's going to be a good NFL quarterback. Not even from the ones who are, you know, sometimes pegged to be can't miss great. So, and you can tell by the ones who are drafted really, really high and it doesn't work out. And that's a normal thing. It happens all the time. And it's always really curious to me how even the coaches who study it all the time have no idea until you fling the guy out there in the situation and see what happens.
Well, look at Brock Purdy.
Exactly. I was just thinking of him as I said that. Yes. It's that there's a classic case. I mean, you just didn't know. And there they were at that franchise with, you know, one quarterback who's already gone to a Super Bowl with them. Another they drafted to because they weren't quite completely thrilled with the first one. And now here's Guy C, you know, who comes in and just sort of inspired everybody. So, yeah, that one team right out there by the bay is just a striking example of the great quarterback mystery of American life.
Hey, we're going one-on-one. Chuck Culpepper with an extended segment, Washington Post. Check him out at Chuck Culpepper 1. We're doing a recap of the national title game. Georgia wins its second straight, but I'm a big TCU fan, and I was a little bit disappointed to see how they performed, and there was a lot of talk that perhaps they did not belong in the title game. What say you, and give us some perspective on what happened.
Oh, no, they belonged. How you play once you get there is never a signal of whether you belonged or not. If you got there, you belonged. That's the way I see it. So I think the way they sort of approached their game against Michigan, their semifinal, and then the way they ran that game was there was such confidence, such aplomb, if you want to say. There was just so much, I say it again, know-how on that side. The way they sort of took the influence over that game and kind of held it all the way, even though it was a wild, wild, you know, rodeo ride to the finish. They made their way there, and they won all those close games during the season for a reason, clearly. It wasn't a set of flukes or anything like that. So I think they lent something to the playoff that it hadn't had before, a surprise team. So it is always kind of a bummer to see it get to the finish and to see it so pulverized like that. And again, my friend Ivan Mazel longtime college football writer, asked Kirby Smart, why was it so easy? I thought it was a great question. And Smart didn't know. He really couldn't quite peg why it worked out to be so easy. Because when TCU scored for 10-7, they were trailing 10-7, you kind of thought, okay, we're at least into something here. No one would have foreseen that the score from there would be 55-0.
You know, I think back to the last time I had you on the program, we were talking about Tennessee had debuted at number one in the country. And did you agree on the four teams that did advance?
I did. I thought it was a little bit of one of those seasons where I don't think the committee had much to choose from in terms of the obvious. I think they were pretty much forced into corner of choosing those four teams just based on records. And we just didn't have that many unbeaten or one-loss teams this year. Then again, I happen to have agreed with the committee and the various committees, because they changed membership, on all 36 of their selections through the 9 years. I look back across it, and I was like, my goodness, I just thought they got it right every time. It's bizarre. But, I just thought that it was, even as TCU lost to Kansas State in the Big 12 title game, I thought that the manner of that defeat kind of told us something about TCU that was really valuable. So keeping them in that spot after a loss, which I think had happened only one other time in the playoff era, that somebody got in after closing with a loss, I thought it was wise. I thought it worked.
Hey, we have hit on some college football. We're going to pivot. We got to talk about the NFL, the divisional round that is about to get underway. Of course, the Jaguars are on the road to face the Kansas City Chiefs, 4:30 kickoff Eastern time on NBC. And obviously the big question is, I mean, can Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars, can they pull off the upset? Can they beat the Chiefs? I know you're a believer in anything, right, Chuck? What say you?
I wonder if, we were just talking about TCU. I wonder if this game will have a TCU look for them, even though they haven't been as consistent this year as TCU was through its year. But where you get to that point where it all just, okay, you've run your course to where you belong, and now it's done. You know, that's the way I kind of see that game. I absolutely love NFL divisional playoff weekend. Last year was so incredible when you had field goals, which all were snapped with 4 seconds left, deciding the first three games. And then you had this Kansas City-Buffalo game that was better than all those three and was, you know, staggering. So I never rule out the divisional playoff magic, but I do think Chiefs are at home, Chiefs are rested, which can be a bad thing. Got to remember that, but I do think this might be the point where we say, okay, the Jags did a fantastic job, and now it's time to say farewell.
Of course, the Chiefs are 14-3, 4:30 kickoff Eastern time. Give me a hit. Let's talk about the Giants and the Eagles as we preview them, Daniel Jones versus Jalen Hurts.
I have this personality quirk, I guess you'd say, where I like to see a regular season like the Eagles had rewarded once the playoff comes. I don't like when we've spent 4 months determining that one team was, what was it, 4 or 5 games better than the other? 4, maybe? Or 3. But anyway, clearly better than the other. And then we spend one day upturning all that. I mean, playoffs are exciting. Playoffs are unpredictable that way. That's what people love about them. But I think the Giants, the way they played against Minnesota, are kind of a frightening team for Philadelphia at this point. And it made me think a little bit of the year that the Giants were the best team. I think it's 2008-9, and the Eagles went into the Meadowlands and knocked them out of the playoffs in the divisional round. So, I think that game is a little bit – that one to me looks a little bit shaky.
Well, we hit and highlight on the games of this afternoon and, of course, tonight. But tomorrow, the AFC Divisional Playoffs with the Bengals and the Bills. I think this is going to be a really good one. And, of course, that's going to be 3 o'clock Eastern time on CBS.
I think it's I mean, we can't help with that matchup, but think about everything everybody went through with the one that was just weeks ago. And, you know, so briefly in the past. So recently, in the past. And, boy, that one's impossible to call, I think. Cincinnati, the way they played, the way they're so tough in the gut, the way they went through road games in the playoffs last year in Nashville and in Kansas City. I just give them a real shot there.
The conversation continues with Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, but the highly anticipated matchup, of course, is my Cowboys against the 49ers. How dangerous are the Cowboys? Can they do it?
You know, what I wonder about the Cowboys all the time is how much we build up our impression of them by how much we talk about the Cowboys, which is all the time, regardless of how good they are.
Right.
I'm wondering that with this one. That was a really, really impressive show in Tampa. I think Dak Prescott is I would just objectively love to see the guy get something great, you know, Super Bowl berth or a Super Bowl. That franchise has not been even in a conference title game, unless I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure I got this, since a Super Bowl that I went to in Arizona in 1996. It's a long time.
Is that crazy? Yeah.
So you always think about, you know, last year they had a home playoff game with San Francisco. They didn't win that, and in kind of, you know, nutty circumstances, but San Francisco was a legit good team, and San Francisco is a legit better team right now. So I think I'm going to stay with the 49ers on this one. But again, like I said at the beginning, I can't the talk around the Cowboys is always so steep that it's got me thinking, wait a minute, because I think Parsons is just, you know, just phenomenal. Everybody thinks it. It's maybe the best player in the league. Who knows? But, you know, I just think the Cowboys do have a lot going for them, but that the 49ers at times this year have been the best team in the league.
They certainly have, and they're 14-4. Of course, that game's going to be on Fox tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern time. And, you know, Chuck, it's interesting. You just mentioned talking about the Bucs, that matchup with the Cowboys last week. After being eliminated, I mean, what do you kind of feel as far as that? What's the status of Tom Brady?
Well, I mean, one of the dynamics in all of sports is how quickly pro sports, how quickly franchises can sort of, or teams can sort of, front offices, coaches can jettison sentimentality, you know? Mm-hmm. You have to get rid of it. I used to hear Jimmy Johnson talk about this during great Cowboys days, how you can't be sentimental and you can't even be grateful if you're going to maintain you can't be grateful when you're making your decisions. You can be grateful in, you know, how you say thank you and everything. But I think that's this point that so very, very many teams in very many sports come to, and I think the Bucs are there now, which is where you've got this guy who has done a lot for you. He's great, greatest of all time in this case. And maybe it's time to move on to the next. And I think a lot of teams get in trouble when they hesitate on that move. So that's one thing that, for example, Johnson was really good at during that time and would have been really good at had he continued with the Cowboys as he should. I always think of him when I think about this dynamic. But I think that's where they are and where the Packers are in terms of Aaron Rodgers, although there's a huge contract built into there. And so these are those moments in sports, and they're all across sports, where you kind of, mm-hmm. fans do it too. You want to stick with your guy. You love your guy. Love comes into it. And roster building is no place for love. So, you know,
Yeah. Hey, we
love
are.
Love belongs everywhere except
yeah,
there.
Yeah. So. We're glad you're with us on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us, Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. Just a few more minutes. Give him a follow on Twitter at ChuckCulpepper1. What are some of your recent articles that our listeners they can look forward to and check out?
Oh, I was at the World Cup in Qatar for 36 days, and that took up most of my recent time. It was, boy, you know, with World Cups, they take a long time to decide the winner, weeks and weeks. They make sure they've got it right. And so that took up most of my – I think I'm still a little tired from that. So, but the final between Argentina and France was one of the best sports events in history, I think. And it's one of those finals with no loser, very flattering upon both the team, which wound up winning, which was Argentina on penalty kicks, and the team which wound up not winning, which was France, but which has become the best soccer program on earth. And so I think, you know, I'm probably still going around. I went to TCU, Michigan, and I went to TCU, Georgia, but I carried with me sort of those fumes from that extraordinary event in the Middle East where, you know, where there's just where there was such a high level of performance from two stars, Lionel Messi of Argentina and Kylian Mbappe of France, who is my favorite athlete in the world to watch at the moment. So, yeah, it's going to take me a while. That was 36 days over there on the other side of the world. It's going to take me a while to remember who I was before that.
So being there, and I'm just curious, I mean, what are the fans like? How are they different, or how are they similar to an NFL fan, since it's a big weekend for us?
I mean, sometimes the noise and the passion can just grab your goosebumps and throw them upward, you know. It's just the sustained noise. And the sort of the distinction of that one, that particular World Cup, was that it was the first one in the Arab world. And so people came from all around the Arab world with a high hope that it would succeed and do well. And they really sort of carried the noise and the fabric and the feeling of it in this particular case. You know, it was in a different part of the world from where these usually are. And so early on, Saudi Arabia upset Argentina in a massive upset. And I just thought, I was in the stadium, and I just thought the noise in here might exceed anything I've ever heard. I do think about college football and the SEC games, especially how loud they are.
Mm-hmm.
But this noise was just, I mean, it was just so consuming. And then through the weeks of the tournament, the Moroccan fans carried it, and their team became the first from Africa or from the Arab world to reach the semifinals. And their national anthems, I would just, oh, I videotaped one of them just to listen to it again and again. The goosebumps I got from that. And and outside the stadiums, they would come just to be there nearby without tickets. So I think the noise of soccer, as most of the world calls it, football, is the biggest sports noise on earth.
Well, it's certainly, back here in the States, it was fascinating to watch. And I tell you what, to all of you tuning in today, be sure and check out. We had an extended segment, so appreciative, to Chuck Culpepper, Washington Post. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Chuck Culpepper, #1. And, of course, Chuck, enjoy. It is our favorite weekend of the year, right? The NFL Divisional Round, 4:30 Eastern time on NBC. The Jaguars and the Chiefs are coming up. Thanks so much, and have a great weekend. Enjoy all the coverage, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You too, Alyssa. Have fun, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. And that, of course, was Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Chuck Culpepper, #1. Enjoy the divisional round. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Give us a follow on Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Don't drink and drive.